This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:07. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Sharmila. So last week, the Prime Minister, Datuk Seri Ismail Sabri Yaakob, shared a Facebook post about how he felt proud being told that Malaysia is being touted as a role model when it comes to racial unity. So we're looking into that, I think, is the easiest way to sum up what we're trying to do here.
So some context. Now, this was conveyed to him by the Muslim World League Sekjen, Sheikh Dr. Muhammad Abdul Karim Al-Isa, who came here to attend the 2022 Southeast Asia Ulama Conference last Thursday. And I think it's kind of an interesting remark, particularly one that's obviously being shared with a little bit of pride by the PM, because I think a lot of people would probably point to recent events and say maybe not so much the case, or rather, perception and reality may be two different things.
It's also tricky, isn't it, when this sort of feedback comes from outside the country? And this is not necessarily specific to Malaysia. I think in general, when you hear of leaders of countries saying that other leaders or, you know, people from beyond the borders are saying that there's a certain perception of the country, the difficulty is always, of course, that it's not a lived reality. And that's just a fact. We see this playing out in these sorts of public statements around the world. I just think it's relevant to say at this point that Dr. Muhammad bin Abdul Karim Isa is a Saudi Arabian politician. So that's the context from which he's actually coming from. And in terms of what we have in place when it comes to unity, the National Unity Policy and National Unity Blueprint 2021 to 2030 were released last February, aiming as always to foster greater national integration. For what it's worth, some responses to that, Ideas, for example, pointed out that it lacked details on the operational processes and relevant mechanisms involved in achieving the goals, which again is a failing that I don't think is specific to this particular blueprint.
And if we look at even remarks from within the administration, so Wan Ahmad Faisal, Wan Ahmad Kamal, who is Deputy Minister of National Unity, admitted in an interview with The Edge back in February that sometimes there's a lack of honest or sincere dialogue when it comes to sensitive cultural issues, right? He used the examples of vernacular schools and race-based politics. He also pointed out that while we live in a multicultural society, that in reality, there's little or no interaction between the various communities. And that essentially said that the ministry might not be able to make the changes they intend to, but they do want to work towards preserving harmony.
That's interesting. Would you agree or disagree with the first part of that statement? In other words, that there is no or little interaction between us in reality? Because I would actually have thought that our policy level decisions don't always work in terms of fostering unity, but that daily life, when I think about the interactions that many of us have, the friend groups in which we circulate, that there is a decent amount of interaction, wouldn't you say?
I struggle with this a lot because I think this is where even we probably fall prey to the my circles and what I see kind of mindset.
100%, yes.
Yeah, so I'd like to think that many of us actually come into contact with and have interactions with people from multiple backgrounds and communities. But I also know enough people whose social groups and even workplaces are largely of one race or one community and perhaps don't really go beyond that. And of course, it also depends on what we mean when you say unity, right? Is it enough to work alongside someone when you may not actually care or know very much about the specificities of their background in the first place?
Yeah, correct. Because actually even seeing the word interaction, I flinched a little bit because what does interaction even mean, right? Is it just a hi, hello, you know, or is it actual depth or nuance when it comes to conversation or interaction? Anyway, we're going to be talking about that today, but we're also going to be extending the conversation to people who live and work in our country but aren't Malaysians, right? And this is coming because just last Saturday, the Prime Minister had made this statement. We did a whole show on it, so I'm not going to belabor the point, but about how foreigners living in Malaysia were also benefiting from subsidies in chicken that were meant for Malaysian citizens. You know, a word like freeloading was used. So in other words, when we talk even about racial unity, are we only talking about the same old story, same old song, right? About the people that we consider.
The literal song, my goodness.
Yes, exactly. The people that we consider as Malaysians, this idea of there being three main categories, another category, you know, or whether we're actually including the lived reality of people who are here right now in the country. Anyway, that's what we'll be exploring with Jason Wee, co-founder of Architects of Diversity, after this. But let us know, do you think Malaysia is a good role model when it comes to racial unity? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bombing frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
It is just about 5:14 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Sharmila. We're talking today about Malaysia serving as a role model for racial unity. This was something that the Prime Minister put a Facebook post up on after being told, right, that we are a role model. And basically this happened when the Muslim World League Secretary General, Sheikh Dr. Muhammad Abdul Karim Al-Isa, was here for a conference. And with that in mind, it's a complicated topic. We are asking you, though, do you think that Malaysia is in fact a good role model for racial unity? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. On the line with us now, we have Jason Wee, co-founder of Architects of Diversity. Jason, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me again.
I just repeated the statement from the Prime Minister. What did you make of this? Where do you think our country stands right now when it comes to the actual issue of unity?
Yeah, so, you know, when I saw the article, I kind of cringed a bit as well, because I said this before in previous interviews as well, but I really dislike the word unity, because what exactly are we referring to? Because one way we could define it is that the absence of physical violence. And, you know, sure, but we don't have that much physical violence in Malaysia compared to countries with incredibly diverse racial groups that oftentimes break onto sectarian conflict. On the other hand, though, you know, you can define it as co-living, where, you know, we're living side by side. And even then, I suspect that there's a decline where we are growing to more homogenous silos around the country. And then you obviously have the definition where we include inclusivity and belonging into the picture, especially when it comes to racial minorities. And I think that paints a pretty different picture when it comes to Malaysia's position at racial unity at the moment.
So I know you said you're not a big fan of the phrase, but I think it needs to be asked, what should this grand concept of racial unity actually look like in Malaysia?
Yeah, I mean, I think if we were to use the actual word unity, sure, obviously we can definitely define unity in the sense where there's an absence of physical violence, because we should, you know, definitely think about that as well. But I think it's this aversion to conflict that we should avoid when it comes to thinking about unity. Because I don't think this an idea of what racial unity should be is not a lack of conflict, but rather it's the ability to confront and reconcile conflicts between racial groups in a productive way, and in a way that ensures that different groups are, you know, have a greater sense of belonging and feel included in part of the country. And I think that's really the metric. We should set ourselves to a higher standard in that regard, just because we're, you know, not breaking out into riots or interpersonal violence every day doesn't mean that we should end there. There is a higher goal of increasing the sense of belonging by all parties in Malaysia.
So when we talk about this issue, right, it can be practiced in a variety of ways. And I think our introduction earlier tried to accommodate those different ways, right? Because it includes culturally and socially the way in which we interact with one another on a daily basis, but also a policy level. How would you say we're doing on both fronts?
Sure. So I think for a large part, Malaysia has been doing a good job in terms of introducing or at least reducing the fear of the unknown, at least among the racial groups that you could say were here and independent sort of formation of Malaysia. And I think when it comes to that, I think we do somewhat of a decent job. I think, however, at least how our society is structured, we don't have that many opportunities to form intergroup relationships if we grew up in a silo or if we are stuck in an environment that doesn't introduce diversity within those spaces. So it definitely does depend. I think, you know, if you're in the Klang Valley, chances are you're probably interacting at least with one other group every day. But if you say, for example, go to Terengganu and Kelantan, where it's incredibly homogenous and that diversity, racial diversity especially, is not present there. I think in a policy dimension, your answer will depend on your definition. If your answer is, if your definition is a lack of physical conflict and defining it as peace that way, I think sure, Malaysia has consolidated our ability to reduce physical violence for a very long time. But I think when it comes to reconciliation, we are nowhere near the ability to have policies that can accurately or effectively hear out and give some form of structured grievance to communities that feel chided by our national policy so far.
So we hear this often, that Malaysians were more united, more accepting decades ago, for instance, in the 1960s. Is there truth to that, or is that more nostalgia?
Yeah, I've always been wondering this too. And so I think while I'm skeptical of this notion is that we have to realize that pre-1969, that inequality in Malaysia, at least economic inequality, was extremely, it was pretty bad. And to the sense that social mobility was still quite low at that point of time. So perhaps it is the case that people were happy or, more united in their particular social bubble before a large swath of social mobility measures were introduced with the NEP. But on the other hand, we also conducted a survey through Architects of Diversity and our anti-discrimination campaign, Sekolah Semua, where we asked our respondents, have they experienced discrimination in the education system? And what we found was that for those above 40 years old, that number was sitting around 40%, versus, say, the younger folks, say, 30 and below, are more inclined to answer that at 60%. So in many ways, you could say that, at an interpersonal level, our micro interactions are informed by the macro factors surrounding us. And those macro factors post-1969 have definitely been one of hostility and distrust post-May 13. And so whether or not our ability to reconcile those feelings from May 13, it's very much part and parcel of why it might appear that 1960s or before 1969 might have been more united or accepting.
So as we speak about policy then, right, we also see that there are attempts to codify this, to have a blueprint, to have larger policies trying to address it. What initiatives have stood out to you as being particularly effective in recent years in trying to foster this sense of harmony?
So yeah, this is a tough one. So I would say that, many people point to, say, PLKN or NS, but we know that deeper research demonstrates that the effects are only marginal. And a lot more improvements need to happen. I was, however, actually quite surprised and, pleasantly surprised by, I think it was a couple months ago, maybe a year ago, that the Minister of Unity introduced multilingualism in Taska Perpaduan's, basically introducing basic, Mandarin, basic Tamil, and basic even Malaysian Sign Language. And I thought that was such a good step because it's an appreciation of diversity in a meaningful way, rather than in a tokenistic way. Sure, it's Taskas. They're not going to learn the language, but that immediate introduction at a young age that helps bridge the gap is useful.
And on the flip side, what areas do you think we need to improve in most urgently?
I could go on forever about this, but obviously the most pressing one, at least for me, is kind of a complete oblivious attitude towards how our SKs especially have become more homogenous, right? And making our SKs more heterogeneous, making more diverse, is not used as a benchmark at the moment. And we are nowhere measuring why, or at least interrogating further why non-Bumiputra's parents are sending their kids not to SKs. I mean, obviously we know some reasons, but what would bring them back? And that's a complete gap in government policy at the moment.
Considering our cultural climate, our values, what are lessons that we could take away from other countries, particularly those that are also seen to embrace the cultural melting pot approach to nation building, right? So not necessarily countries that are really homogenous or monocultural.
I think, people compare and use the word melting pot as because that's kind of the celebrated version of diversity. And versus some people say like a fruit salad where people, groups maintain they are individual characteristics while existing in the same bowl. Now, the issue with the melting pot model is that it provides a lot of dominance to the groups who've created numbers. So groups that are the majority, that have greater cultural influence over that particular nation will end up, if you're cooking an actual dish, tastes a lot stronger. And in many ways, that approach of a melting pot can possibly dilute or even marginalize minority communities. So I think it's quite difficult. I would obviously point to instances where, for example, South Africa, that have taken a very unique approach at, you know, handling their form of diversity. And I'll point to some of their socioeconomic affirmative action measures as well. And Lee Hwang An has written a lot of this. But I think that that's obviously a lot more fundamental. I think at least in the short term, what we can really embrace is a notion of diversity and inclusion. Because when we are only emphasizing unity, unity is quite political and, you know, as I mentioned before, differently defined. I think there are a lot clearer abilities to measure how we're progressing when we take a diversity and inclusion lens, when we make sure that we're focusing on individuals, not a society per se, that is just absent of conflict.
Now, speaking of minority communities, conversations here around this topic actually rarely take into account our large migrant communities. For instance, the recent remarks from the PM on chicken subsidies benefiting only quote-unquote freeloading foreigners. What did you make of this in relation to the context of racial harmony? And how can these definitions of unity extend to include foreign workers, to include refugees?
I think this is an interesting question. And I think maybe not now yet, but I think in 10 years, this will be something that Malaysia will be grappling with even more. I think some of the reasons this sentiment has occurred beyond just, you know, basic xenophobia is how we've gone about defining who is Malaysian. And there are certain traits of what is Malaysian per se, and there are traits that are not Malaysian. But the moment we draw those lines, we solidify and think of something as Malaysian and non-Malaysian, then it doesn't allow for flexibility. And instead, instill some form of rigidity of this is our country. It, you know, composition stopped in 1960s, and you know we're going to be set on that. And so I think it's a lot of defining what it means to be Malaysian. Is it a certain set of traits, rather is it just a simple contribution and belonging to the nation? And so of course our definition of unity can extend to include foreign workers, but I think in order for us to move there, we first need to interrogate our idea of what it means to be Malaysian.
Jason, in closing, and I know we've asked you this before, I also know that it's a kind of a simplistic question for a very tough situation, but what further steps would you like to see taken to actually build unity in our country, encompassing Malaysians, as well as people living and working here, nation building right now?
I'll give a practical answer and a more inspirational answer. I think the practical answer is to really kind of supersede this facade, right, of unity. We really need the data. So at least on the technical end, we are living in some form of darkness, intentionally, of course, to hide us away from perhaps the lack of inclusivity in Malaysia. On a more inspirational sense, I think I really want to, I guess, focus on the interpersonal here, that there are groups, you know, I have many friends who are, interact with different groups, and they create marvelous art and ways to reproduce these forms of more power balance interactions in Malaysia. And it would be great, you know, how do we interrogate our own ability to equalize power within our own spaces? And so that's really something I would ask of all Malaysians in a more inspirational way, of course.
Jason, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me again.
That was Jason Wee, co-founder of Architects of Diversity, weighing in on a statement by the Prime Minister, not a statement so much as a Facebook post, saying that he felt some pride when told that Malaysia is being seen as a role model when it comes to racial unity. And so we've been asking you, do you think that's true? Is Malaysia a good role model when it comes to unity? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. I believe we have time for one message from Katrina.
Katrina says, the fact that we need a policy to foster unity indicates that there's a lack of unity.
Worse yet, when that policy then doesn't necessarily have actionable steps or clear actionable steps, which is, I suppose, a roundabout way of acknowledging how complicated the situation actually is on the ground.
Shani says, just visited this Orang Asli Kampung. The Batin mentioned that the next door plantation with almost all migrant workers enjoyed piped water versus the Orang Asli community needing to use the river for bathing and using a tube well for drinking water. Ironically, this is in the PM's constituency. Now, I just want to say that I think this is actually often what happens when we talk about resources not being allocated fairly, right? That communities are often compared quite unfairly against other communities when actually we should be asking for resources for everyone.
I agree with that. I also think that this actually has something to do with capitalism. Because, I mean, you mentioned plantation, and so it comes down to workers being given, in this instance at least, certain, I wouldn't call it a privilege, certain basic rights, actually, purely on the basis of there being money to be made, it feels like. So I think that that's another element here, right, in that message. Meanwhile, we have, let's see, Katrina saying, racial unity. Yeah, okay. A quick recap. This week, we talked about how the PM scapegoated migrants and refugees in the context of the government removing chicken subsidies and people suffering. That's first. Secondly, we see signs everywhere for rooms to rent only for certain races. Third, we see banners outside condos, restaurants, places of worship saying migrants and refugees from particular countries aren't welcome. Four, we had mass protests when there was a chance that we would ratify the UN Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. I remember that. That's the ICERD. What is the racial representation in positions of power and influence? Malaysian Chinese and Malaysian Indians who have been here for generations are still called pendatang. I can continue, but this is too long already and it's barely scratched the surface. It's nonsensical to say we're a picture of racial unity.
I think that covers a lot of ground and offers a lot of points. Roslyn, in the meantime, has a different point of view. She says, on the ground, most Malaysians, I believe, are united. It's the politicians who throws in the spanner to divide us. Just this morning at the UH toilet, a Malay lady offered my Indian friend and I tissue when she saw us fumbling in our bags. When I thanked her, she said, kami satu keluarga kan? And at a work event, Malay abangs shared their minimal drinks with many of us non-Malays, no race, no religion, no colour. Plus, those of us who have attended any bursary rally can attest to the great harmony and unity among Malaysians. This point about Malaysians versus Malaysian politicians actually is something that's come through quite a bit in many of the messages.
Yeah, and that's why we were trying to draw a distinction earlier, right, between day-to-day behaviours and policy, because that's also what it is. It's the difference between day-to-day Malaysians and then political rhetoric. Those stories are quite lovely. Rosalind, thank you so much for sharing. Meanwhile, I think what it comes down to here is how you perceive the word unity is strange, right? Because it's something that you can look in a dictionary and find the definition of, but it doesn't change the fact that the messages coming in, there are many different perspectives, and that's informing, I think, the way in which people are responding. So Naga making a great point, saying racial unity, yes, I would agree in general. We're not at each other's throats, but there is an undercurrent of discontent among the populace, a sense of inequality, racism, and being second class in certain segments of society.
And a lot of those go back to policies, don't they? More so than day-to-day treatment or behavior. Rowan, meanwhile, says, working abroad, I meet many people who are impressed at how so many ethnic groups can exist in harmony and appreciate the beauty of living in a multicultural society, not to mention the many holidays as a side benefit.
I agree with that. But I also think that this is what happens when you view it externally. There is a difference and it's nice to hear it. But then sometimes you come back and you get like a very sobering shower of cold water and you think, okay, right. So there is that, there is also this. But yeah, there are other messages coming in already and a lot of interesting points being brought up. So join the conversation and tell us, do you think that Malaysia is a good role model for racial unity? That number to call is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back for your messages after the 5:30 news. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.